Welcome, Friends of Wildlife, to Protect Our Wildlife's audio series, Untamed. I am Brenna Galdenzi, and I'm the president and co-founder of Protect Our Wildlife, Vermont's number one all-volunteer wildlife protection advocacy nonprofit. In this audio series, we will be speaking freely about many issues impacting wildlife in Vermont and how you can help. Today, we will be discussing coyote hounding with our guest, Diana Hansen, who's had unfortunate encounters with hounders in her community. Diana is the founder and creator of Mountain Hollow Medicinals in Craftsbury, Vermont, which offers transformative healing through energy medicine, integrative wellness certifications, and education on wellness and herbalism through practices such as spiritual ecology and earth stewardship. You can learn more about her offerings and summer events at mountainhollowmedicinals.com, along with Diana's podcast, Dreaming in the Hollow, found on all podcast platforms. You can also find Mountain Hollow Medicinals on Instagram and Facebook. So I am so thankful to have you joining me today, Diana, and welcome. I think this conversation will feel cathartic for both of us, since I know you and I have been commiserating on this over the last couple of years. So thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So Protect Our Wildlife just covered hounding in November on our last podcast. But this segment covers coyote hounding specifically, which is happening right now in Vermont. So it seems like a very timely opportunity to discuss coyote hounding. And I guess a lot of people, when you say hounding, bear hounding, coyote hounding, they're not really quite sure what that means. And I know I don't even like to put this activity in the same category as hunting. So coyote hounding is the practice of those who hunt coyotes with hounds or dogs, and they unleash radio collared hounds into the woods or farms or wherever on the scent of a lone coyote. And the hounds will run that coyote for miles, for hours, through people's posted property, through fragile tracts of forest land. And when the hounder finally catches up to his hounds, once they've cornered a coyote, that coyote is ultimately shot and killed. And like bear hounding and other forms of hounding, the coyote hounders are under no control of their dogs. They're oftentimes off in their vehicles, only with their handheld GPS devices tracking the dog's movements. This can mean if the hounds end up attacking someone's domestic animal, or if the hounds end up chasing after the wrong animal, there's zero control, which opens up a whole other host of problems unrelated to the coyote. Additionally, it is unregulated. Coyote hounders do not have to have any special permit to run their hounds. There's no reporting of the coyotes that they killed. There's no fur bearer hunting license. And Fish and Wildlife has little to no knowledge of what happens with these hounders. And the activity really is legalized dog fighting. And that's not hyperbole, because all you need to do is look at photos or videos that have been posted by Vermont coyote hounders, you know, showing a pack of hounds attacking and mauling an injured coyote. And once the hounder catches up, they take photos and they take videos, not much different from those who participate in cockfighting or pit bull fights. It is relishing in this violence. And I am not at all hesitant to call it exactly what it is. And dogfighting is illegal in Vermont, yet somehow this activity persists. Lastly, the very act of coyote hounding or hunting coyotes in general is rooted in such an extreme hatred towards coyotes. It's almost like these hounders are seeking to punish coyotes, and they do so in so many different gruesome ways, and we're going to focus just on coyote hounding in today's segment. But our perspective is, if the starting point for hounding, or the hunting of coyotes with hounds, comes from a place of such hatred towards an animal, again, much different than, say, those who hunt deer. I mean, deer hunters, they'll tell you they love deer. But if the starting point for coyote hounding is this intense hatred towards coyotes, then it should be no surprise why we're seeing such extreme acts of violence and cruelty inflicted upon coyotes. Just this morning, Diana and I were talking about a wonderful commentary that Chris Shadler wrote in a newspaper. And for those of you who don't know Chris Shadler, she's a wild canine ecologist, and she's also the Vermont representative for Project Coyote, the National Coyote Advocate Organization. And I think, Diana, you had a quote from that that you pulled out that was really relevant to our discussion today.
Yes, absolutely. And I can read it for you now. Once hounds get the scent of a coyote, the animal is pursued by the pack of dogs until it is cornered and turns to defend itself. The coyote is at a great disadvantage. Dogs are faster in the long run and have more stamina. They are well fed and rested before a chase. In the wild, coyotes rest only sporadically and are rarely well fed. Like all wild creatures, their survival is day to day, using instinct and wits. Unlike bears, which are also chased by hounds, coyotes cannot climb a tree to escape.
That really is or says everything, right? These coyotes, they don't stand a chance against a pack of powerful hounds. These aren't small dogs. I mean, the dogs that are used to hunt coyotes are sometimes mixes, you know, pit bull mixes, plot hounds, all different types of large, powerful dogs. And imagine 5 or 6 or 7 of these dogs against one coyote who is just out there trying to make his or her living in the wild. There was something that I read recently, and it was from an investigation out of Michigan. But what happens in Michigan with coyote hounding is what happens right here in Vermont, but too often what happens is out of public sight. But I'd like to read a part of this investigation, and this is the nature of coyote hounding. I can hear the dogs coming now. We're going to let them finish this thing off. It's a beautiful, beautiful coyote. He might have a little fight left in him. His eyes are open. A narrator exhales into the video. It was posted on YouTube, but has since been removed. The coyote hounds bound through deep snow toward a mature coyote, already shot and wounded, lying nearly motionless on the thigh-high drifts. Its eyes blink. The narrator wants the dogs to finish what the hunter did not. This is going to be some live action, the man says as he aims the video camera. There he is. There he is. Get him, Doc. Get him. We're going to get Cooter in here. He's a machine. So that type of violence and enjoyment in witnessing an animal suffer, again, is not unique to Michigan. It happens in every single state that allows coyote hounding. And that includes our neighboring state of New Hampshire, New York State, here in Vermont. Diana, there were so many reasons why I wanted you to join me on this podcast today, because you have testified alongside me in the State House for Better Protections for Wildlife. But it was the experience that you went through a couple of years ago on your own property. And I remember to this day when you had called me after it happened and we talked about it and just really feeling helpless as to what we can do, not only to protect the coyotes, but protect our family and our property and our mental health. So can you share your experience with our listeners?
I can. So this happened in the end of February 2019. I think it was a Saturday morning. It was pretty early, before 8 a.m. And we were all still in bed, just sort of, you know, hanging out and relaxing. And my son had gone to the bathroom. And in the bathroom, you could see out in the backyard through the window. And so he went in there and immediately shouted for me to come in. Come to the bathroom, Mom. There's dogs. There's dogs. And I thought, what? You know, and there was a decent amount of snow, you know, maybe 2-3 feet of snow at the time. And I got up and looked out the window, and it was hard for me to process exactly what I was seeing at first. Before this happened, I never knew that such a thing existed in the state of Vermont or even New England, really. So there was maybe 5 or 6 hound dogs just sort of chaotically moving towards our house from the back field, which is goes way far back. There's more fields and then woods, and most of that is land trust land. So they were coming back into the backyard and they were just zigzagging all over the property. And my husband and I just immediately asked the kids to stay in the house no matter what happens. And we got our things on really quickly and ran out into the snow. This entire time, there was really nobody else here. And we ran out back to try to assess what was happening. It was really difficult to see what was happening. Again, the dogs were just so chaotic. I didn't know there was a coyote there for actually quite a while, because what the dogs were doing was sort of coming up at the coyote and pushing it down into the snow and biting at it. And so maybe 7 to 10 minutes later, a couple of big trucks pulled up in the front of our house, and, you know, maybe five or six hounders came out of their trucks and were walked right onto our property. And we immediately were asking them to stop the dogs from what was happening, and also for them to get off of our property completely. And through this entire experience, none of those requests were honored. It was very clear to me right away that these dogs were completely out of control and acting very violent. And I didn't know if that meant we were in danger as well. I've had experience with lots of different hound dogs before, and I'd never seen anything like this. And so the hounders were really, their behavior that day was basically just standing on my property watching what was happening. And our land wasn't posted at the time, and I didn't understand that that needed to be done to even protect myself from something like this. So to them, they really had full rights over being on my property. I think that was obvious at the time. And then at some point, I heard my husband yell, and I looked over at the greenhouse because we were scattered everywhere just trying to process what was happening. And in the coyotes trying to escape the dogs, it climbed up on top of our greenhouse and the hounds followed it. So our greenhouse was just getting annihilated by the dogs. And so the roof was really ripped up, and both doorways on each side were really ripped up, and there were holes, I'm assuming, from the coyote trying to escape and get into some kind of shelter, but also the hound dogs following it everywhere and just kind of chaotically climbing things. You know, meanwhile, my kids were in the downstairs dining room watching all of this happen through the back windows of the house, and that was really mortifying to me, knowing that they were witnessing this wild animal being torn apart. I mean, it was really clear to the eye that the tail of the coyote was broken and hanging loose. And there was just blood all over our property in the snow. And I remember walking the property in the 2 days after and found so much blood just splattered everywhere. It was horrifying. And so we had a lot of interactions with the hounders. The head of that hounding group, which, and I say that because they were his dogs, my husband was able to approach him and he said, "We're going to need you to help pay for the damages to our property," which would be the greenhouse. And his response to my husband, and I quote this because I'll never really forget it, was that it's the state's coyote and the state should pay for the damage. And I think in that moment, you know, once I heard that, I realized the lack of respect and care that this individual has for just the public, just landowners in general, and just how dangerous this scenario could have played out if my kids were outside. I mean, there was all kinds of things going through my head as a mom. Yeah, it was difficult. And since then, we've had our land posted, which was also difficult because there's kind of an argument of posting land and not posting land. And I think it's difficult for deer hunters to see land being posted in general, rightly so. And there was a lot of issues that came up around this. And I think that the biggest issue for me that I came forward with in the town meeting that I went to with our select board was public safety. You know, these hounders absolutely could not stop their dogs when I asked them to, and they did not leave the property. And if I had domestic animals, chickens, birds, horses, or whatever, there absolutely could have been damage to any of those animals, and it just could have been a lot worse. So there's a lot of concern that I still have around the public safety around coyote hounding too.
You have hit on so many different issues that are wrong with coyote hounding. And just to touch on some of the things that you mentioned, and something that I've heard over the past probably 5 years from folks, is that these coyote hounders feel emboldened and they're bullies. There's another woman who lives in your community who has been, and I say the word terrorized because that is the word, she had been terrorized by hounders for years. They would intentionally release hounds next to her property, rev their truck engines. We've documented her encounter in our communications. And she has thanked us profusely for helping her feel empowered to do something. And I really think that the more the public shares their encounters, like you, Diana, and other Vermonters, and the more that we expose what's happening, all of the things that you touched on so eloquently, the public safety concern, the lack of property owner rights, the abject cruelty and violence that people are subject to witness against their will. I really think that hounding will be prohibited in the future. I think that more and more people are going to post their land who would have otherwise not posted their land. And something else I wanted to touch on is that you run a business at this location. Imagine if you had a client there that day. Mm-hmm. That impacts your business. And I talked to one of our members yesterday from Addison County, and he was thinking about opening up his property to host weddings. They have beautiful property out in Addison County, a lot of acres, wonderful views. And he said, I don't want to do this because imagine if somebody from out of state pays all this money to come here and host an event on our property, and I have absolutely no rights as a landowner. If hounds, whether they're bear hounds or coyote hounds, come plowing through the property. And what's really most disappointing is the State Fish and Wildlife Department and the governor knowing that this is happening and knowing how dangerous and reckless and what a terrible stain it is on Vermont's hunting heritage. And they refuse to speak out against it. They refuse not only to speak out against it, but they refuse to even try to regulate it. We've had conversations before with the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department asking if they would consider at least requiring permits for coyote hounders and reporting just as some type of effort to get a handle on what's happening. And they have no interest. So that to me has completely eroded any trust or faith in this government agency that seems to be really entrenched in just continuing with the status quo. Mm-hmm. So, Diana, thank you so much for sharing that with me again today. Every time you and I talk about it, all those emotions kind of bubble up again. And I'm not embarrassed to say that they're emotions. And we're human beings. We should feel emotions. When we hear something like that, it should make us feel a certain way. I would like to read an email. I just mentioned the family from Addison County who's had problems with coyote hounders on their property for years. And this quote is from him. And He's a native Vermonter. He's hunted deer. He's hunted grouse. Would have never thought about posting his property. But this is part of a testimony that he sent a couple of years ago on hounding, on coyote hounding. It is not hunting when you can chase them down with hounds with trackers on them. They surround your property and it goes on all year long. As a landowner, as a taxpayer in Vermont, I can't sit in my house and feel safe. I can't go out and enjoy my yard and feel safe. There is a video of a Wolcott coyote hunter. His hounds are killing a coyote in a dogfight. And Lewis Porter's response to me was, quote, I take it you're against hunting, end quote. Michael Vick went to jail for a long time for that same exact thing. So hearing testimony like that from Vermonters is really upsetting. And especially when we have the former commissioner, Lewis Porter, somehow saying that if somebody's against coyote hounding, that they're against hunting. And that's a really easy way to deflect from the issue at hand. And the commissioner really said that to the wrong person, because this family from Addison County come from a long line of hunters. His wife, her family owns a dairy farm for generations. So this is impacting all kinds of Vermonters. We recently heard from a woman in the Northeast Kingdom who has trail cameras all over her property, and she captures such abundant wildlife doing wild things. I mean, coyotes and bobcats. And over the summer, she captured some coyote pups playing in a stream on her property. And she shared the videos. And I mean, people were just so elated to see just this beauty of nature and wildlife living wild and free. And her 150 acres has never been posted. And she recently saw something on the very same trail cameras that captured those coyote pups playing in the stream. She captured something very different. She captured a pack of radio collared coyote hounds chasing down an injured coyote, visibly injured. The coyote's leg was limping and it was bloodied. And you see the hounds chasing the coyote, and ultimately the coyote hounder killed the coyote. And now she is going to be posting her property. So I guess I have to ask hunters, and we do have hunters who are members, and we're grateful for their support on those things we can agree on. And there's a lot. But we're wondering why more hunters don't stand out or speak out against these activities that really just reflect poorly on hunting in general, especially for people that are moving here from out of state and they don't really understand hunting at all. And the first time they see hunting or they experience hunting is with coyote hounders or bear hounders, they're going to lump all hunting activity into that one bucket. And they're going to view all hunting as being terrible. And so really, I think it should be ethical sportsmen or ethical hunters and the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department and the governor making a very concerted effort to separate ethical hunters and people who are hunting for food from these types of hunters that are doing it for very different reasons. Back to what you just shared, Diana, and how it really did just, even hearing it again, and this is something you and I have talked about so many times, I mean, it really does weigh on you mentally. It really does. These are the kinds of things when you see these images that keep you up at night. A lot of the work that you do, I know, is helping people overcome trauma. And this activity, no doubt, impacts people's mental health. I've heard it from our members. I've heard it from Vermonters who have reached out to us, especially those who have witnessed the activity firsthand, like yourself. Mm-hmm. You share, as someone who's spent so many years studying this and how this impacts people and how this impacts our mental state and our emotional well-being.
Absolutely. A lot of psychologists use the term small trauma or big trauma, or little trauma or big trauma, right? Just to honor sometimes the small things that can be traumatic too. But this I would categorize as a big trauma for a number of reasons. I think to watch any wild animal, doesn't matter what species it is, be tortured in this way is something that doesn't really leave you. And feeling so helpless, right? That's the thing about trauma, is this helpless feeling where something's happening to you and you can't stop it. And so for me, you know, in the weeks following, I was aware of a lot of physical symptoms that were coming up, you know, because this incident happened real fast, really hard. It was incredibly shocking. And processing it was a huge challenge. And then, like you touch upon a few minutes ago, when you go through experience like this and you realize that the people in seats of power around you in your town and in your state don't support you and aren't there to protect you, that is also another moment of trauma in your community and where you live. So that was also really difficult for me. But the physical symptoms that came on were, you know, immediate lack of sleep. I was unable to focus on my daily tasks. I was on alert, this fright flight sensation in my nervous system all the time. I realized, it took me a minute to realize that at night I was closing all the curtains in my house, which I'd never done before. You know, we live in an area that's rural. We have amazing neighbors. We're surrounded by farms. Previous to this, I felt so safe in my community that we never locked our door. You know, our house was open to our friends and loved ones. And this just changed everything. And I was also closing my curtains like that because I actually had people in my community that were telling me that I was in danger now and I should be armed because of these hounders, because there was going to be a backlash, which also was incredibly disturbing to me. And I want to just note that that did not happen, but it's a horrible thing to do to someone when they've experienced such trauma such as this. So
I just don't want to forget to mention this. When you talk about people being afraid to speak out against these bad actors, that's a very real thing. I've had so many people contact Protect Our Wildlife saying that I really, really want to come and I want to testify and I want to show up at the State House and I'm afraid to do so. I think people are now feeling empowered because they're not helpless. And I'm so thankful you mentioned that that is a sign of, I'm not sure if you said it was a sign of trauma, but that can trigger trauma, right? Because that feeling of helplessness in your own home, on your own land. And what I would like to leave people with is to know that there is an army of people behind you. If this is happening to you, contact us. You are certainly not the only one that's going through this. And there's power in numbers. I really dislike bullies. And I really do think that people who do this to animals, I mean, bullying is an understatement for what they do, but it is a form of dominance, a form of inflicting one's power on another being that is helpless against them. That is what hounding is. And I don't think that some people that do this would not at all hesitate to bully people who disagree with them. I also want to be careful that I'm not broad brushing everyone who hunts with hounds. I think it's very easy for us, for me, to lump everybody in the same category. I know that there are people that do this, and I wrote about this recently in VT Digger, that would probably be the same guys that would help you out of a ditch if your car went off the road. Or people are complex and they're multi-layered, but there is a segment of people that do this. And I would say more than a few who are dangerous. And I don't want people to feel frightened to speak out. And I thank you really for using your voice and helping others, you know, lift others up to do the same. And you have done that.
Yeah. And just to reassure people with that as well, that this particular hounder that I dealt with is probably one of the most well-known, unliked hounder from deer hunters and other hounders, coon hounders and bear hounders too. They know exactly who he is. They certainly have expressed to me that they don't approve of what's going on. So in my case, there wasn't a backlash. I don't think that that's true. And I would hope that people would step forward more often. And I think we need more support in our community to people who have experienced this. I mean, if I didn't have the education that I have on healing and trauma and therapies, I might not have come through this as well as I have. I mean, to this day, I'm still not okay about it. But, you know, I had multiple therapies. I had EMDR because, you know, we hear hound dogs all year round in this area around Craftsbury. Whether it's coyote, bear, or coon hounding, there's a lot of cornfields here. And so we get woken up anytime between the hours of 10 p.m. and 3 a.m. and sometimes very early in the morning on Sundays. But coon hounding season is hard because they're out almost every night and they're so loud. It's not like a domestic dog. So the sound alone was triggering me every single time. So the EMDR came in and really supported me with that. I had one or two sessions and was able to hear the dogs and not have a panic attack, which is difficult.
Hearing the hounds, it's not like hearing a dog outside at night barking, maybe a dog has a dog house that's outside. And you know that when you hear those hounds barking or baying, they call it, you know what's happening. You know that it's not just a dog barking. You know those dogs are in the process of terrorizing, mauling, killing raccoons, especially, as you mentioned, in the summer months when they're out running their dogs on raccoons. When you hear that sound, you immediately associate that sound with what's actually happening. And it's not at all a pleasant thought. And I can't imagine trying to sleep at night and hearing that. I mean, there really is no relief for people in certain pockets of the state from this. And I think, as you and I talked about earlier, I really think that we need to break this down by species: bear hounds, coyote hounds, raccoon hounds, those particular activities, and discuss the challenges with each one of those, because they are different. I mean, It's similar in that a wild animal is being terrorized and chased and oftentimes injured and mauled and killed, but each one of those activities is slightly different and presents different challenges, both for the wild animal and the people in the community. I know I touched on regulations quickly, but I just want to, because this is really important, there are no regulations. There's no permits. There's no special fur-bearing hunting license. There's no reporting, no limits. Hounders can do this night and day if they wanted, 365 days of the year. Coyote hounding does typically happen more so in the winter months, but there are no laws prohibiting it from happening all year long if they wanted to. Diana, I know that you and I have talked about different types of hunting and hounding and trapping. And well, actually, I don't want to speak for you. Can you share how you feel about hunting in general and how you feel this particular activity of hounding reflects on Vermont and our image to the rest of the country and its hunting heritage?
Yeah. Hunting, ethical hunting has been part of my family my whole life. My father was an ethical hunter. He hunted birds and deer, and my uncles typically would hunt deer and moose. And one of my uncles lived in Vermont my entire life, and even before I was born, and was an avid hunter in Vermont and even traveled out west at times. And he was just a really well-loved, well-respected man. And he taught me a lot about the ethics around hunting and also mostly the respect that you really need to have in the forest around wild animals and how you should treat them and how you need to act if you encounter one. And it really gave me a sense of what ethical hunting is like. So I think with coyote hounding and hounding even in particular, it's really affecting already the hunting and deer hunting community in Vermont dramatically. You know, deer hunters have regulations in place, but they also have a long-standing moral code of collaborating with landowners in ways where healthy land management can be achieved. And so they have these places where they can hunt and they're collaborating with the landowner. But coyote hounding is really breaking apart this collaboration with such a total lack of respect to any landowner, really, and how they wish to manage their property. And also, you know, hundreds upon hundreds of acres have already been newly posted just in the few years since my incident with coyote hounding. So really quickly, acres and acres of land are being closed off to hunting. When you experience something like I did, it really changes your perspective on what's going on in the state. And you really feel like you need to protect your land and do whatever you can to make that work. And it's hard because I know there's a lot of ethical deer hunters in my life and in my community that are concerned and worried about this. But there's just sort of a lack of conversation and collaboration going on to sort of create regulations and stop this kind of chaos from continuing to move forward. So I think if we can all sort of come together and create strong regulations, we might be able to move forward on this and have, you know, less and less of this rigid divide, and deer hunters can continue this long-standing tradition that's been here for so long without showing up on a property that maybe they've hunted on for years and suddenly there's a posted signs everywhere.
You said that perfectly, and you provide a perspective that I just never really had. And hearing that from you, I really respect, and I think our listeners will as well. What's happening right now, and this is going to kind of touch upon something that you said, is that I think the reason why we don't have more hunters joining us in this battle is because there is a willful misinformation campaign that's being spearheaded by some sportsmen's lobbyists in Montpelier. And what they like to do is say, oh, if they ban coyote hounding, they're going to ban deer hunting next, and they're going to ban fishing, and they're going to ban guns. And they unnecessarily scare people. It's really a way to manipulate people. And I hope that hunters see that and understand what's being done. And it's not at all helpful to kind of coming together on some of these issues and figuring out solutions when we have, you know, again, sportsmen's lobbyists and even our prior Fish and Wildlife Commissioner engaged in that. kind of broad brushing groups that oppose hounding as anti-hunting groups. That's just wrong. You know, a lot of the groups that we align with who oppose these activities are certainly not broadly anti-hunting. So I think to your point, Diana, the reason why we're not seeing more hunters is because they're being misled. And I really hope that they'll reach out to us and that they call us and they have conversations with me and some of the other Protect Our Wildlife board members about our positions and to kind of help an understanding, because there's been a lot of purposeful confusion disseminated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've had a few local deer hunters come to my door actually and offer support and concern around the same issue. And that's really, really helpful.
Yeah. I want to read one thing because this is about coyotes and lethal attempts at coyote control. They really don't work. So something we didn't discuss, and maybe again, this is another podcast to talk about coyotes more broadly, is the excuse that we hear a lot from Fish and Wildlife is that we need to, you know, manage coyotes. And again, we're kind of, they're getting off topic because the conversation is not about banning all coyote hunting. In the past, wildlife advocates have only ever advocated for a regulated coyote hunting season so that coyote pups aren't orphaned in the spring and that coyote mothers are able to nurse their pups. So again, these lethal attempts, including hounding, they don't work. And I want to read something that we've published before that I think might be helpful for some people. So approximately 2/3 of coyotes live in packs. 1/3 of them roam, waiting for an opportunity to join a pack. And a stable pack consists of a monogamous breeding pair that only mates once a year. Other pack members do not breed. Indiscriminate killing of a breeding male or female forces that mate to leave to find a new mate. And then you have a roamer or a disperser or a transient coyote comes in and breeds with as many females as he can, causing a burst in that local population. And what that potentially means is more coyotes on the landscape. And without the leadership of that alpha pack, the alpha male and female, the other pack members are likely unskilled at hunting and may end up causing problems with humans that weren't even there before. So I think we need to kind of talk about coyote hunting in general in a future segment and address a lot of these, a lot of the misinformation about why coyote hunting happens at all. So what can people do? So people can write their legislators, call the governor. You can post your property or post hunting by permission only, which means that you can allow those hunters you know or certain forms of hunting, but prohibit coyote hunting or other forms of hunting that you don't want on your land. And we also encourage people to check out Protect Our Wildlife's Legal Fund. This is a new effort that we started a couple of months ago, thanks to a grant we received, that if you are a landowner who has posted your property and have problems with hounds, we may be able to help you get legal advice and protect your property as you should be able to. So we've covered a lot here. And Diana, again, I am so grateful for your strength in your voice and sharing your experience. And again, can you just share your website address again and where people can reach you?
Sure. You can find out more about what I do at mountainhollowmedicinals.com. And I'm so grateful for you, Brenna. I feel like you were the first person who showed up to help me and my family and give us the tools we need to move forward. So I really appreciate what you do.
Well, now you're going to make me cry. All right. Well, thank you again. And until next time, friends, stay wild.